If you're interested in developing your project managers so that they deliver predictable results and help you make more money, this episode of Construction Genius is for you. My guest is Kyle Nitchin, and he is a senior project manager. He's been in the business for a little under a decade, and he has developed a framework that he has executed in his own personal experience and communicates to others to help people to be more effective as a project manager. And it includes 7 archetypes. And an archetype is just a fancy way of saying an ideal example or something to model yourself after. And those archetypes are a communicator, an enforcer, a builder, a leader, an attorney, an accountant, and a business developer. In other words, if you want to be a well-rounded, successful project manager, you need to develop those aspects of skill and ability. And that's what we talk about here today on Construction Genius. Join my conversation with Kyle. Feel free to share it with other people who you think would benefit from it. And thank you for listening to Construction Genius. This is Eric Anderton, and you're listening to Construction Genius, a leadership masterclass. Thomas Edison said that genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. If you're a construction leader, you know all about the perspiration, and this show is all about the 1% inspiration that you can add to your hard work to help you to improve your leadership. Kyle, welcome to Construction Genius.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on. I'd like you just to introduce yourself to my audience. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into construction, all that kind of good stuff.
I've been in construction for coming on a decade now. I work for a world-class national construction management firm called Leighton Construction. And I am a senior project manager for them, and I'm managing a chunk of operations here in the Southern California region. So that is what I do now. And how I've gotten there, I didn't really have the, I guess, typical path into the construction management world. Growing up, I grew up in Canada and traveled around quite a bit for my father's job. And I landed myself in Colorado finishing high school. And I wasn't always a typical, very good in formal education. I didn't get the best grades and that. So when it came to graduating high school, I took some time and just got into working. And that was really what I wanted to do, is just start working. Going right into school really didn't sound too great to me. I wasn't really ready for that and in the right headspace for it. So I got a job for a local landscape contractor, and I was just a laborer working for a landscape company. And it was fun, planting sod, pouring concrete, landscaping homes and commercial buildings. It was really cool. It was a lot of work. But I worked on a crew with some good guys, and I learned a lot about working on a construction site and building projects and kind of creating something. So I did that for a few years until I did finally get my head wrapped around going to school and pursuing a degree to kind of open up with the next set of doors. And with that background in construction, that did lead me to a construction management degree. From there, which was at Colorado State, I networked and got connected with Leighton Construction and ended up taking my first assignment with them. That was in Miami Beach, Florida, where we did some hospitality construction, built a few hotels and performing arts center. And then ever since then, I've been traveling around, and I found my way into Southern California, where I'm now doing healthcare construction focused. So yeah, that's my quick origin story.
That's great. I think it's really very interesting. You said you spent a number of years in landscaping. How many years total?
3.
So you reached a certain point where you decided it was time to go to college. What did it take to get there? Because, you know, some people, they just go to work and they just keep working.
Yeah, I think it was maturing a little bit. When I was 18, 19, I couldn't really see and plan my future. I just wasn't in the headspace to do that. I know I'm not the only one in that boat. A lot of people expect to have your life figured out at 18, 19, 20. And that's just unrealistic, I think, in my opinion. And there's no reason why people should put pressure on themselves to do that. Whereas I wasn't definitely in there. So I just wanted to take some action and kind of just do something. I just wanted to work and make some money and take a step forward. And so I did that until I could kind of figure out, okay, this isn't what I want to do my whole life. I know I can do a little bit more than this. So then once I got into that space where I can finally say, okay, I can connect some dots here, I started to create a little plan. And that involved, I wanted to kind of move and get out of my current environment because that really wasn't ultimately where I wanted to be also. So I had a little bit of drive going for me at that point. And I took that drive and kind of just made some plans and some next steps. And I think that's key for younger folks coming and starting their career and the next generation of construction is just explore things, take action, and pivot along the way if need be.
Yeah, I know. I love that. So you decided to go to college. Did you decide right out of the gate to go construction management?
No, I didn't. I got into college. I took one step and I had to get in first. And you don't have to pick your degree right out when you get in. You know, there's a set of general requirement classes I'm sure everyone's aware of. So I got into those general classes that you'd have to take no matter what. And then I started reviewing some options. And when I looked at the construction management option, I was like, oh, I have this background and I can connect the dots here. And I kind of saw that world. And then I saw what the CM degree could offer. And I was like, that's cool. That makes sense for me other than all these other degrees that were kind of vague and I didn't really know what they would lead to. So I took a chance on that. And again, it was all about moving forward and forward motion.
How valuable was your field experience as you were going through college in terms of perhaps giving you more insights into the material you were learning?
It was valuable. I could grasp the concept of the basic concepts that were being talked about. And I'm not going to say it helped me so much because I was very labor focused, but I could grasp the concept of a project and a crew and man hours and things of that nature. So it was helpful.
That was helpful. Okay. So now it sounds like when you were in college, was Layton there recruiting people?
Yes, they were.
What was it about the way that Layton went about their recruiting that caused you to choose them?
Honestly, it was a leader. I met a leader inside of Layton through that connection. And the way he spoke and the way he treated me, to be honest, especially during our interview, was phenomenal. I really admired him for what he did. And it seemed like he took a lot of time out of his day and out of his schedule to dedicate to this college kid. And I respected that. That was a big driver in that decision.
Let's explore that a little bit more. You say it was a leader. You don't need to name him unless you want to, but what title did he hold in the company?
He was the executive vice president of one of the biggest business units.
And was he visiting the campus and sort of outreaching specifically, or did you get connected to him through what they were doing on the campus?
Correct. I got connected to him through what was happening on the campus. I had a good conversation with the person on campus, and he said, hey, you know, I need to introduce you to this guy. And I said, okay, cool. I'd love to chat with him. And that connection happened. And next thing you know, he flew me out to come visit him, picked me up, and we had a great time. I knew after leaving that day and that interaction, that interview, I said, I want to spend time around people like that. I want to be like that. I want to surround myself like that. And he really seemed like he cared about my professional goals and my personal goals, which was important.
Excellent. Did you start off as a project engineer with Layton?
I did. Yep.
What was the biggest hurdle that you faced in the first 90 days to 6 months of your career?
Honestly, the biggest hurdle was this internal battle I had with me trying to figure out my role and my path in my career. And I had this big internal battle with passion. I kept questioning and doubting myself about, is this what I'm passionate about? Is doing these RFIs and submittals and this construction path that I'm on, is it really what I'm meant to do? I think that comes up in a young person's mind a lot when they're being engulfed in work and tasks and responsibilities. I battle with myself a lot about that, about is this what I'm passionate about? And it almost led me to make some wrong decisions. And I'm glad that I didn't, considering different options or thinking about things like that. But eventually, how I overcame that was instead of worrying about what I was quote unquote passionate about, I started focusing on getting really good at something. That was the big moment for me that pivoted when I said, let me get really good at this first. It doesn't really matter if I'm passionate about. And getting really good allowed me to find my passion in other things, which really was more along leading teams and leading situations and helping people and being able to deliver a good service. It wasn't till I got really good, I could deliver a good service.
Yeah, let me ask you, when you say getting really good, what is it that you wanted to get or you needed to get really good at?
I needed to get really good at this game of construction management. So I had to work on being a really good communicator, being a really good risk manager, being a good builder. I had to learn a lot of stuff about building and how different materials and methods and processes worked, scheduling, pretty much the basics of it. I had to get really good at the task or the game that we play. Then I started to become much more passionate about it and much more I found my lane. I found my value in that.
What do you think are some of the key aspects of team building that a construction leader needs to focus on?
Number one, psychological safety. The space and the environment and the team dynamic needs to be a safe environment where people have the feeling that they can speak up, share their opinions, feedback, comments without the worry of being judged, criticized, or condemned in any sort of way. So there needs to be a free and open space for collaboration.
Let me explore that with you before you move on, because it's interesting you use this term psychological safety. And I know it's a term that is common in a lot of business realms. And you defined it as creating a space where people feel free to speak up and share their opinions without being worried that they're going to get judged for their opinions. Did I hear that correctly?
That's correct. Yep.
Okay. So how does a leader create that space where someone feels free to speak up and at the same time retain the ability to say, well, you know, I appreciate your opinion on this, but you're actually wrong here. How does a leader handle that? Because sometimes you might create that space, but somebody may be speaking out of the side of their mouths and what they're saying is totally off base and you need to tell them that. How do you handle that?
Well, you got to master the artful critique. So you got to recognize, thank you for sharing your opinion. That matters and that's important. Now, let me dissect this a little bit for you so I can explain that this is not the right path to go on or this is not the right idea because of X, Y, and Z. Now, again, recognize, empathize with that opinion or that perspective and say, but please continue to bring things up like this to me because I do want to hear what you have to say. So it's kind of an artful delivery of your critique. It's really how you deliver it because you don't want to share that. And yeah, not everyone's ideas or perspective is going to be an effective one. And so that's on the leader to deliver a message like that.
It's interesting because as you're talking here, I'm thinking about generational differences, right? Because someone who's older, 40s, 50s, maybe like me, you're hearing what you just said, Kyle, and you're nodding your head because you understand that younger people, generally speaking, want an environment like that. But at the same time, you're sighing, right? Because dude, why can't I just tell you that your idea isn't wrong and I appreciate you sharing it, but you're wrong? Why can't I be that direct with someone? Why do I have to be this artful? Because I don't have time to be artful, right? Because I don't have time. I don't have energy. I don't want to be artful. I just want to be straightforward, blunt, and to the point. This is construction. Let's move on.
Well, guess what? Yeah, you're absolutely right. But we're human beings and we are all not wired the same way. Okay. Are you familiar with the DISC personality test?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. So everyone is wired in a certain different way. And people who are very influential and can communicate extremely effectively, they know that person that they're speaking to. So for you, Eric, I can tell that you can handle a direct comment. So if I were to you, I would recognize who you are. If I'm working with you, I'd recognize who you are. And I would come at you very directly because I can deliver that message to you. I know you're not going to lose any sleep. I know you can just move about your day and say, thank you, Roger that. And that's fine. Now, the person on the other hand, they are a little bit more analytical. They're a little bit more in the weeds and they question things and they like to learn every detail. And if I were to come at that person very direct, they would probably think that I'm hurting their feelings or I am judging them, when in reality, I'm not. I just want to get straight to the point and want to reach my goal and we want to stay on track. That's what we have to recognize. You have to know your audience. And there's a way, DISC is one of them, but there's a few other ways that you can kind of get quick reads on people. And you got to tailor your communication to who you're speaking to. So it's important when you're managing a team and leading a team that you know with the personality and the behavior type that each of your team members fall into. And you got to remember that when you're communicating with them and working with them and receiving their ideas and critiquing their ideas.
Okay, so that's really interesting because you're talking about this idea of psychological safety. And I like the way that you defined it because you find it as being able to creating a space where people are willing to speak up and able to speak up. And then you brought in this other element here about a leader needing to understand the difference between personalities. And I know that my audience right now is shaking their head and saying, yes, I agree with that. But that really is the challenge, isn't it? Is understanding the differences between people. And I think one of the hardest things for people to do is to be able to get out of themselves and see things from another person's perspective. And then one of the things I think leaders struggle with is adapting themselves to other people without compromising or feeling that they're compromising their values. Because sometimes when leaders choose to approach someone in a way that feels unnatural to them, they feel like they're doing something wrong. They feel like they're compromising in some way because they're changing their approach. Is that something that you've experienced or something that you've seen?
I've seen that, yes. That might be kind of an ego thing, to be honest. You got to keep your ego in check. If you are uncomfortable with getting outside yourself and maybe detaching from your direct style of communication, most leaders are, most CEOs and leaders, top leaders are the direct style. They're the eagles. They're the people that just go for it and have a direct style of communication. Well, they also should be able to detach and go to the other side of the spectrum and put that full humility on and take on a different hat. And yeah, so I've seen that. But at the end of the day, your responsibility is to grow your people and to make sure your people are well understood and can do their job. And that requires you to see things and put yourself in different situations and get outside yourself. There's a quote that I really love: match the moment, not the mirror. Don't act like yourself all the time. You got to put yourself in the moment. Match the moment, not the mirror. Means behave like you need to behave in the moment with that person instead of behaving like you're naturally wired to behave.
I really like that quote. And I'd like you to give us some insight into how you apply that yourself in a conversation, in a situation that you face as you're leading a team.
Okay. So in context, if I'm going to my assistant project manager and I knowingly know that they're a little bit more analytical, more supportive, they like to subordinate themselves a little bit in typical scenarios, likes to work in the spreadsheets and stuff like that and analyze things. They're not very direct. And I know that my direct communication is going to maybe rub them the wrong way or just not come across right. They're not going to hear what I need them to hear. So I go in very calmly and with a very calm voice, and I'd lower my tone, maybe start with the question, hey, do you got a second? I say, yeah, so what do you think about X, Y, and Z? What are your thoughts? Where are you at on this? And so what do you think that we need to do next in order to meet this timeline that we're on? And I'd kind of just peel it back. And then I would slip in very delicately the request or the thing that I need them to do. And then that's in a delegation perspective. But I'm just going to massage around, go the indirect approach, I guess that what you would say. And that's the key, not raising your voice and not coming up them very direct. They're going to interpret that the wrong way and maybe get a little defensive. And it's just going to be very inefficient.
That last thing that you said there, how you connect your communication style with efficiency. That's actually a helpful perspective because, again, someone is listening to what you're saying, Kyle. And I think most people are saying, yeah, I understand what you're saying, Kyle, but I'm still going to do the way I do it. And perhaps if you continue to communicate the way that you're naturally wired to communicate, you're actually creating inefficiencies unintentionally in your organization.
Spot on. And today's complex projects, we need to be efficient and we need to have everyone on the team rowing in the right direction together all at the same time. And those projects are very successful. And they start with these type of things at the communication level. And when everyone's being heard, being valued, and for their own naturally wired personalities, you get a lot done. You're very effective.
It's interesting. I had this picture when you were just describing going in and talking to someone. Perhaps a leader would have a little cheat sheet prior to going into a conversation. If you're using the DISC profile, for instance, and you're a DI, and those of you who've taken DISCs, you know what I mean. If you're like a D and you're going in to talk to an S or a C, then you're just reminding yourself of that prior to going into the conversation so that you're in the right space to have an efficient and effective conversation with the person that you're leading.
Yeah. And those tools are available, Eric. And I actually have that. I have everyone on my team's DISC chart in front of me. So I know their personalities. That's just one of the cool things that we can do is internally, we do that. We take the DISC and it's a tool for us to help understand people.
It's interesting because, again, another thing that I'm picking up in what you're saying is sometimes as leaders, we're moving at such a pace that there's a saying that they have in the military, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And sometimes as leaders, what we actually need to do is slow down and think for a minute or two about the conversation I'm going to have and the person I'm having it with. Because if I take that extra time, then when I'm in the conversation, that efficiency and that effectiveness then is able to kick in and I can actually get more done over a longer period of time.
Yes. And if you have everyone on your team working at their highest potential and their maximum, they're giving you everything they got because that's what happens when you have good leadership in place. And like you said, yeah, that efficiency is like compounding. It's compounding and people are growing and it's an amazing thing when you have that.
So as a leader, we're creating these safe spaces. And I think it's in a positive way that psychological safety as opposed to a safe space. I think you've done a good job defining that. You're being thoughtful in the way that you're approaching people. How do you approach issues of accountability? That's another challenge that a lot of leaders have is holding people accountable and making sure that regardless of how they behave, they're actually doing the work. Regardless of their personality, they are getting stuff done that they're supposed to be getting done.
That is a good one. That accountability is key. And I actually have a framework of what the influential project manager looks like and behaves like. And we can get into that later. But one of them is the enforcer, is one of the archetypes that he or she embodies is the enforcer archetype. And that's just enforcing accountability throughout your chain of command and throughout your systems.
Let's just go into that a little bit more. You said the enforcer archetype, and we can go into it right now, this idea of the influential project manager. Tell me what you mean there by the enforcer archetype.
So an archetype is just a model or a pattern that we get from stories that people can learn and they help us understand each other. That's what an archetype is. So you've heard probably or can picture what the enforcer archetype would be in stories, and that's that enforcer on a sports team or enforcer in an action movie or something like that. But in a business context, that would be somebody that's just enforcing the rules and the responsibilities that everyone holds as part of your job. And that's what that is. And that comes through in your communication and the way that you run your systems and your businesses. So that's a key thing that us project managers and project leaders need to behave as. We need to embody that enforcer archetype.
Let me ask you about that. Tell me exactly what you mean by these. How's that practically seen in a project leader or a project manager's daily behavior, that enforcer archetype?
So that is seen in the day-to-day when in your staff meetings or your daily huddles, when we're talking about things, sharing the goals, the tasks, the to-dos, and breaking them down and divvying them up by responsibility and saying, okay, Eric, we need to do X, Y, and Z. Let's say you're going to take X and Y. that's going to be assigned to you. You're going to be the owner of that item. And then when are you going to have that done by? Please commit to us, to the group, of when you're going to deliver those responsibilities. And you're going to say, oh, okay, yep, I got X and Y, and that's going to be done by next Tuesday by 12 p.m. And then if that doesn't happen, then the enforcer needs to come in and say, Eric, let's talk about why that didn't happen. And let me understand that. And let's talk about why that's not acceptable. Because let me remind you, we're here running a business here. We're servicing our client. That's what we're here to do. I can't really have that because it doesn't allow us to get to our highest, most strategic initiatives here. Remember, we're here to do this. We're here to succeed. We're here to win. I need you to step up and complete these. You are accountable to those. And then again, that conversation will continue and continue. And if something doesn't happen, or maybe you'd get back on track on that time. So that's, I guess, a snapshot of how that would look.
Let's explore that a little bit more then. What are some of the other archetypes? Because you use this word archetype, so I'm assuming that there's other ones that you've articulated in terms of an influential project manager. Do you have a couple more of those?
Yes, I do. There are seven total. And this framework is just the seven archetypes / behavior types of what I kind of call the influential project manager. And that is the project manager that's well-rounded and ultimately generates predictable outcomes. So with these seven behavior types, these are what I've found to be the most common leading indicators that lead to a predictable, successful outcome, whether a happy customer, a project that finishes on time, a project that finishes within budget. So I'll get into what those are.
Yeah, let's do it. First, give us the seven.
Yeah. So the first one is the communicator. The second one is the enforcer. The third is the builder. The fourth is the leader. The fifth is the attorney. The sixth is the accountant. And the seventh is the business developer.
Cool. Which one do you want to start with?
Well, let's start with the leader, one of my favorites. And just so you know, we're not all perfect. Each of us have strengths in some of them and we're weaker in the others. And it's just an exercise that we can all do as project managers to pick out one or two and think about, okay, how can I increase, if I rate each one on scale of 1 to 10, how can I bump up my weak one to be like an 8 or a 9? Like, what do I have to do? What does that look like? So it's more of an exercise to figure out, okay, how can I become more well-rounded in this project management game? And so the leader archetype is a lot of what we already discussed. It's the one who always is putting the team first, the team and the mission before themselves. They're willing to do thankless tasks in the shadows and not receive any recognition. They create and nurture other leaders. And so they're constantly trying to develop other leaders, and they take extreme ownership over everything that happens underneath them, around them, and with them.
How does the leader then distinguish doing thankless tasks with being stuck in the weeds?
Well, I wouldn't say it is stuck in the weeds. Thankless tasks can be something as, hey, this person on my team needs support in this area. I can see it. Let me go ahead and just do this because it's the right thing to do so that person can get back on track. Or, hey, maybe my team's being a little distracted right now because of something that's going on. Well, let me go ahead and take care of that distraction so my team can stay focused on what's most important. It's just kind of filling in some gaps of where what needs to be supported or where that needs to happen. Or it could just be as simple as just staying up in the 30,000 foot range where leaders need to spend most of their time and just dishing out, not doing it for the recognition. It's just simply giving recognition and recognizing people.
Hey, this is Eric. Hope you're enjoying my conversation with Kyle. Quick break to tell you about a special offer. And it's all about my book, Construction Genius. Here's the special offer. If you purchase 10 or more copies of Construction Genius on Amazon, they're $20 each, reach out to me and I will schedule with your team, with the people that you give the book to, a 1-hour Zoom call where I answer any questions that you'd like about the book and provide you some bonus leadership training for the folks in your organization. Now, I would normally charge $2,500 or more for an hour of my time, but all you need to do is purchase 10 of these books at 20 bucks each, which I think is about 200 bucks, right? My math sucks. And then just contact me and I will conduct that for your team. So go out to Amazon right now, purchase 10 copies plus of Construction Genius. Contact me via email, eric@constructiongenius.com, and we'll get that Zoom call with your team scheduled. All right, back to my conversation with Kyle. How do you distinguish this idea of the thankless tasks from micromanagement? The reason I'm asking this is because I don't disagree with what you're saying, Kyle, but I'm curious because a lot of leaders get stuck either doing things that other people should be doing or micromanaging people while they're doing their tasks. And that's kind of what popped into my head when you talked about those thankless tasks. And I just want to make sure that we're distinguishing that for the audience so that we can think through this clearly.
Yeah, those are two separate things. So micromanaging, it's never a good thing. And you're going to have to understand that your people are not going to do everything perfect and exactly how you want it to be done. And that's fine. If they can get it to 80%, 90%, that's good enough. And then and that's okay that it's not going to be done exactly how you would do it. So we got to get out of that mindset of, hey, that's okay. As long as it gets done, it might not be the way you did it exactly or the way you thought you would have been doing it exactly, but that's never going to hurt. If I'm from my personal experience, that's never have put me in a bad position or put anyone really in a bad position. So you dealt the micromanaging and doing things that you shouldn't be doing, you should ask yourself, does this thing require my expertise or not? And if not, then you need to delegate that and get that off your plate to someone else. Okay. But if it does require your expertise, then maybe you should have some involvement in it, depending on what it is. But that's usually my indicator of, hey, I know that my expertise is not needed here. My exact perspective is not needed here. Maybe some of my expertise is, but someone else can do this. I got to get it off my plate because I got to focus on what's most important. I got to focus on the future and what's coming down the pipeline.
Let me highlight that one phrase real quick, Kyle. Your exact perspective is not needed. And that to me is something that you were talking about earlier where a leader needs to let go of their ego sometimes.
Yes.
That's interesting. Anything else on the leader archetype before we move on to the other ones?
No.
So tell me about the communicator archetype.
The communicator archetype, it's the archetype of the person that is, you probably think it is an excellent communicator. The person that's always keeping everyone on the same page. They're communicating a lot and they're communicating effectively. And they're tailoring that communication to their audience, to those personalities. They're thinking about who that is being received by, what they're doing, how they might receive it. And they're tailoring that message accordingly. They communicate with all the tools. They communicate with thoughts. They communicate with words. They communicate with visuals. They communicate with body language. Okay. So they got the full spectrum. They are the master of clear communication. Clear communication. Let me define what that is. Clear communication is when the idea in my head and the idea in your head is the exact same after I communicate it to you. So there is a match. So when I'm communicating my idea and it goes into your head, it's the same. I might even double check, hey, you want to repeat that back to me so I know that we're on the same page? And you say, okay, wait, there was one little detail that may have misunderstood. So let me add that in. That's clear communication.
Let me ask you about body language. What is a particular aspect of body language that you focus on when you are communicating?
If I'm communicating, I'm going to be making eye contact. I'm going to be listening as well as if we're going back and forth. That is a huge component. I think communicating is that like there's more listening than there is actually speaking and communicating. And when I'm listening, I'm going to make sure my body language is open and not closed off to that person. So if someone's coming to my office and they want to speak, I'll make sure I open up and address that person. I'll make sure I make eye contact. I'll make sure that as I'm listening, I'm kind of nodding at certain points and making sure that, okay, I acknowledge that. I acknowledge that. And you keep going. I'm following you. And so it's little micro gestures and micro facial expressions that are very important in being understood and making sure someone else is feeling understood as well.
What are some key strategies or tactics you can use to be a better listener, do you think?
Like I said, body language is one of them. Opening up your body language, maybe not crossing your arms so much.
So you're saying that body language affects your ability to listen?
Yes, it does. If your body, your mind, and your words will typically follow your body, there's a physiological aspect that I'm not an expert on, but people can look that up. There is a connection between body and mind, and especially with other people too. You can notice it in other people is if their language is a little bit closed off, then you can kind of either point something out, it's open up a little bit, or you can maybe say, this might not be the right time to talk. I might need to come back at a later time when something's clearly on a person's mind. As far as listening, asking questions during the conversation to make sure that you understood, nodding, acknowledging, maybe, okay, interesting, something like that. As the person is talking, letting them know that you're following the message, you're actually thinking and about this. You're not worrying about what you're going to say next. That is huge. So actually just listen and put your biases aside, because that's another thing. You might be triggered on your certain biases and the way our mind works. You need to put all that side, your own ego and perspective out of it, and just hear the other person's side, and then formulate after that they've got everything out they need to say. You can formulate your next move and your actual response. It's going to be very effective.
Excellent. So we've done the communicator. We talked about the leader. We talked about the enforcer to kick off. Tell me about the builder. What do you mean by the builder archetype?
The builder archetype is a master of the art of building and has in-depth knowledge of materials, building systems, knows how to efficiently run a site and an operation construction-wise. So you're ultimately taking on the superintendent archetype or the superintendent mindset or how they think about things. That is an important component because that's what we manage. We manage construction. So the more you know about the work and how it's executed and what the challenges are for the people who are actually doing the work, the better manager you can be and the better you can ultimately control your outcome. So that's key. And I may have missed that when you asked previously what was a big mistake that a lot of young PEs do that come into the industry. They don't invest enough time into the field and learning the building aspect of it and spending time with their superintendents. I think I made that mistake for a little bit too. I wish I would have done it sooner.
Why do you think PEs make that mistake?
Because it's uncomfortable. It's outside their comfort zone. When you go on the job site, sometimes it can be intimidating when there's a lot going on. These guys are experts and they're talking a different language, and there might be an intimidation factor there. So I think that's important. And investing that time as a young PE and just as a growing project manager, that taking on that builder archetype of learning a lean construction operation, how to reduce waste and maximize value, and also being able to see what's not on the plans. You can look at a set of plans, but it doesn't show everything. A true superintendent, a true builder will be able to see the things that aren't shown there because of what it would take logistically to make that plan a reality.
So I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it, because some people, they may think of themselves as, let's say I'm a PE and then I'm going to be a PM and then I'm going to be a PX, right? They disconnect themselves in their thinking from the field, even though they know the field is where obviously everything gets done. But what I like about what you were just sharing, Kyle, is that idea of the superintendent mindset. It's not that you are the superintendent, but you're learning to think as a superintendent thinks about a project in a more hands-on and direct way, so that you kind of get a real feel for what needs to be done as you're leading a project team in a particular situation.
Yes, absolutely. And the way we structure our jobs, or I structure, is the superintendent's our business partner. We are equal leaders on executing this project. And to be able to see it from their perspective is key as a partner. So yeah, we need to exercise that archetype and embody it.
It's really interesting. I think I'll just make another point on that, that if you're a leader in your construction company, if you can communicate something of what Kyle was just hitting on there in terms of encouraging your PEs and your PMs to take on a superintendent type perspective, that can really help bridge the gaps that occur often between the project side of an organization and the field side of an organization or the office in the field.
Yes.
Okay, let's go on to the attorney archetype. That's an interesting one, right? Not many builders think of themselves as attorneys. I think I know where you're going with this, Kyle, but just explore that with us, please.
Yes. So the attorney archetype is exactly what it sounds like. It's the risk management side and compliance side of what we do. I've had my mentor tell me in the past about, hey, you're not actually a project manager. Think of yourself as a risk manager. Okay. Get your mind in that. And that really stuck with me. It's important because how we're all working together building this project, but we're all tied together via contracts, right? We're all tied together via this contract where the owner to GC, GC to sub, sub to vendor, everyone's tied together contractually. So you need to know how to navigate the world of contracts. And contracts are often in a bunch of jargon that a lot of people can't understand. So as the influential project manager, you need to be able to be comfortable in that world of contracts and be able to communicate what this means contractually to other people and how to enforce it properly, ethically, and correctly to other people, because that is how this game is played and how we manage our risk as organizations.
How does a understanding of the contract affect a project manager's ability to influence and gain credibility with the folks who are doing the work out in the field?
For me, I wouldn't go to the field and talk about anything related to a contract, right? But my communication would be backed by the contract requirements. So I would make sure me knowing the contract and everything that it means, I would help people, guide people to stay within the limits and within the guidelines of the contract. And that way it keeps everyone safe. It's not a weapon. It's not something to beat over the head with people. It's a roadmap. It's something that all of our companies agreed to abide by when we went in and set off to execute this project. So I would do it to help keep everyone safe. And if I know how to articulate it and I understand it, then I have the best ability to do that.
Excellent. So let's talk about the accountant then. Give us a little bit about the accountant archetype.
The accountant archetype is also what it sounds like. It's being well-versed in cash and financial literacy. As big-time commercial construction project managers, we're managing millions and millions of dollars, okay? It's big money that has come in across our desks on a daily basis. So we need to understand how to organize money, how to budget a project, how to manage those budgets, how to forecast expenses and do these fancy reports, and ultimately understand our money so we can make high quality informed decisions on our projects. So we are running a business. A project is essentially a little mini business that the project manager is very entrepreneurial, which is an aspect I love about what we do. We're running our own little business and we need to know how to run our resources properly. And taking on and embodying yourself as the accountant archetype, that person who knows assets and liabilities and expenses and things of this nature, you give yourself a lot of skill sets that you can really make some good decisions and run a good project.
It's interesting as you're describing this, Kyle, I'm thinking about how you don't introduce this framework the day that someone gets promoted from PE to PM. It's something that you're integrating into your recruiting efforts and into your development efforts from day one. You can take a framework like this and really be emphasizing this as someone is growing in the business.
Oh, yeah. I talk about this with project engineers, superintendents, project managers. It's key. everyone needs to be on board with this.
We've talked about the communicator, the enforcer, the builder, the leader, the attorney, the accountant, and now one that many, many, many people dread, the business development archetype. Tell us about that.
So the business development archetype is that persona or that behavior type, maybe the salesman, the person who develops business and relationships, because at the end of the day, we can't make a career and make a living off of just doing one project. It's not like that. We need to do another one and another one and another one and another one and another one, and we need to keep doing them. So we need to keep that in mind as we execute and go about our business. We have to develop very healthy relationships. We want to make sure that there's a next one. Our customer satisfied. Our customer is pleased. You're doing business development type things. You're making sure that relationship's taken care of. They're satisfied. So it's that persona and that archetype comes down to your ability to care about the people on the other side that's getting the service or who you're servicing. It's being charismatic. It's being a likable person. It's being a guy, you know what? That was a great experience and I really liked working with Kyle and I want to do another project. I'm looking forward. Not only was this good, but I'm looking forward to the next one we do with them. So it's getting that repeat business and it's going about and keeping that in the back of your mind as you're not only doing the work and managing the issues, because things can get a little heated from time to time, can be stressful, but just making sure your relationships are intact and taken care of.
It's interesting. I often think about how you are selling the next project as you're building the current project. The very act of the service that you're delivering and the way that you interact on a daily basis is selling that next opportunity.
Yes, exactly.
Tell me what you mean about charismatic, though, because when you say charismatic, you know, something like some Tony Robbins dude standing out in front of a bunch of people and someone listening to this may be thinking, I'm an engineer. I don't know many engineers that are that charismatic. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is, I guess, is likable, is just a person you're kind of just drawn to. I like the way Eric treated me when I was around Eric. He always made me feel good. Made me feel acknowledged and he's funny and he just had an aura to him that was, I kind of gravitate towards it. And that's kind of how I'm thinking about that charismatic being. And typically business development people and salespeople are like that. They're charismatic. They draw attention and they make people feel good from my experience. And that's why they're in that role, is because they attract, like they're magnetic. That's, I guess, the word that I'm looking for.
I think it's interesting just to think about that, because again, when you say that, some people listening may be thinking, well, that's just not me. I'm a very magnetic guy. I've got to be a magnetic, rather. But what I'd like to suggest to the audience is that if you are a good communicator, if you're a fair enforcer, if you're a skilled builder, if you're a consistent leader, then what that will do is it will create magnetism to you that isn't dependent upon some sort of flashy style. It's based on the core of who you are as a person, both character-wise and technical-wise, and that creates a charisma which is undeniable.
Well said, Eric.
So this is really great, this framework that you've developed. Just tell us a little bit more about how you're using this in your daily interactions and just a little bit more about how people can contact you, get to know a little bit more about you, Kyle.
Yeah. In my daily interactions, I present this to the people I work with and anyone that wants to learn how to be a better builder, a better project manager. And just ultimately, what it comes down to is what is most desirable in our business is a predictable outcome. And so those are the things that I believe that lead to those predictable outcomes. With those behavior types and knowing how to navigate them, it gives you a wide skill set to manage the chaos that comes on a project. So I just touch on them whenever the situation or the context arises. They often come up some weeks and days. We'll see a theme and we'll talk about it. So that's how that is typically discussed. And then as far as what I'm doing, on the side, I have a little passion project that is called the Influential Project Manager. And it's a weekly newsletter that I send out every Tuesday. Each Tuesday, I'll do a deep dive on an actionable topic or an actionable idea that relates to what we kind of talked about on this podcast, which is becoming a more influential leader, generating a predictable outcome. We'll talk about industry best practices, productivity, lean construction, and anything in between. My goal and my mission with it is to ultimately generate more leaders inside the industry who will go on and join me in tackling the industry's biggest problems. We have a few challenges that we're all working through, and the industry is growing and disrupting itself right now. I think with more leadership and more people committed to delivering good projects, good quality, predictable projects, we will be able to create some sort of change for good and make this just a more exciting and more fun business and hopefully draw more new people to it because we need that. So that is what my goal is and what I've been up to.
Excellent. We're going to have links in the show notes so that you can subscribe to Kyle's newsletter if you'd like, and also his LinkedIn and Twitter handles so that you can interact with him on those social media platforms also. Kyle, I really appreciate your time today. One last question. I know you're down there in Southern California. If you're going out for a meal, what's your favorite restaurant to hit?
I'll typically hit a farm-to-table type restaurant, something that has got a good protein, whether it be a steak or fish and a nice healthy salad, something like that.
Got any particular recommendations?
Let's see. In Southern California, check out the 101 North. That's a recommendation for you. It's in Westlake Village.
Okay. We will put a link in the show notes to 101 North in Westlake Village if you're ever down there in LA.
Yeah, it's excellent.
And you want a little farm to table? That's a good tip. Awesome. Kyle, thank you for joining me here today. I really appreciate your time and your insights. And I do wish you the best in all your endeavors.
Thank you, Eric. I appreciate it. It was fun.
All right. Hey, this is Eric. Thank you for listening today to my interview with Kyle. Make sure you check out the links in the show notes so that you can get in touch with him, subscribe to his newsletter. Have you ever wondered why project executives, area managers struggle with leading teams? I think, in my experience, it's because most construction leaders have an engineering background and they're comfortable with tools and detailed plans, black and white specifications, and hard work. But when they step up into senior leadership roles and shift to overseeing people instead of projects, they struggle and they fail to reach the profit goals that they're responsible for. One potential answer to that struggle, particularly for a newly promoted leader, is executive coaching. And what is the role of an executive coach? An executive coach is a sounding board who can help a new leader navigate through the challenges that they're facing, clearly define goals that they need to achieve, and then hold them accountable for the achieving of those goals. And I do a ton of executive coaching like this for my clients. So if you have a leader or leaders in your organization that could use some outside help, reach out to me on my website, constructiongenius.com/contact. Put your details into the contact form. I'll get in touch with you and we can have a short conversation about if or how I can help you and your company. Thanks again for listening to Construction Genius today, and I look forward to you checking out the next episode.